You are now listening to The Griot's Black Podcast Network, Black Culture Amplified.
In the mid-90s at my college, Auburn University, there was this nightclub called the Ultra Box. It was like right across the street from campus. It was basically the black nightclub for all the black students. And, you know, there was, of course, a bunch of white clubs. And the thing about the white clubs is they had what they call a membership policy. So you just couldn't pay your money and go in. You either had a membership or the fee was that you had to fill out this application. They'll give you a card and you could go in because they were essentially private clubs. The most famous one, you could look it up. It's called the Supper Club. But the Ultra Box was the only black club. It was the only nightclub for black people until, you know, white people started coming. And, you know, as it grew, you know, there'd be one or two white people there. And then, you know, more white people started showing up because, you know, this was the mid-90s. Everybody was starting to listen to hip hop. And as more white people came, the club raised the price of the drinks. They started playing more diverse music. And, you know, one of the things about the Ultra Box was that if you went to the bar, you could like talk to somebody because it was going to take a long time to get your drinks. But when the white people started showing up, they renovated, they put up a VIP section where you could get your drinks really quickly. But, you know, they would cost more. And in the VIP section, they had another DJ that played like EDM music and basically white music. And at first, the black people liked it. Like, you could pay a couple more dollars, get you a drink real fast. But then they started making more changes. You know, they upped the price of all the drinks. And then sometimes you'd go there and the DJ from the VIP section would be playing white music in the regular part of the club. And then one day we showed up and they had a sign that said, no baseball caps, no gold chains, and no jerseys. And just like that, the Ultra Box had been gentrified. Yep, the Ultra Box was white.
I'm Michael Harriet, world-famous white peepologist, and this is The Griot Daily.
The only podcast that actually looks at you like one of your little friends. And today we're going to talk about gentrification. What is gentrification? Because we got to know what gentrification is before we even talk about this. Now, according to our girl Merriam-Webster, gentrification is a process in which poor areas as of a city experiences an influx of middle class or wealthy people who renovate and rebuild homes and businesses, and which often results in an increase in property values and the displacement of earlier, usually poor residents. Now, you know, that's a long definition, but when I used to teach my class called Race as an Economic Construct, I could simplify it, right? I used a more relatable word for gentrification. I called it micro-colonization. Now think about it. See, when the English colonizers from the Virginia Company of London showed up on the shores of Turtle Island, which is, you know, what they used to call America or North America, or, you know, this continent. Well, they would say that they came there for economic development. You know, of course, the natives who were already there wouldn't say that because the natives knew that they were basically there to gentrify this continent. And there are some people, of course, who think that there's nothing wrong with gentrification. If you live in a neighborhood, you want a Panera Bread and a Starbucks too. Like, I don't drink coffee, but apparently Starbucks coffee is like totally different from all the coffees in the world. Maybe they get their coffee beans from Whitelandia, or, you know, the white version of some country in the Caucasus Mountains. But the problem is, there is a difference between neighborhood revitalization and gentrification. Now, both of them make improvements and add resources to neighborhoods, but the goal of one is to change or improve the lives of the people who live there. But the main goal of gentrification is to change or improve the area to make it attractive for people who don't live there. And that's the most essential part of gentrification. Displacement. Think of it this way. See, there was nothing wrong with those white people who came to the Ultra Box if they liked the music and the atmosphere and the people who partied there already. But when they started bringing their friends, they wanted the music to change. They didn't want to wait at the bar, so they wanted their own bar. They wanted to go to a black club, but they didn't like the stuff that made the Ultra Box a black club. So they erased the stuff that made them uncomfortable because of their whiteness, because of their privilege, because they were used to the supper club. They were used to all the white clubs. And the same is true with neighborhoods. See, there's nothing wrong with a white person moving into a black neighborhood. The problem is, you know, most white people don't like living in black neighborhoods. Oh, I should say that's not my opinion. There are studies that show that the vast majority of white people don't live in diverse neighborhoods as opposed to black and Hispanic people. And the thing is that because white people don't live or don't like living around black people, there's less competition for black homes, which makes black neighborhoods cheaper to live in. According to a study at the Brookings Institute, the average U.S. metropolitan area's homes, where the population is 50% black, are valued at roughly half the price as homes with no black residents, in neighborhoods with no black residents. And that's even if they have the same amenities, same resources, same crime rates. And that study also says that 10% of neighborhoods are majority black. That's across America. And they are home to 41% of the black population who live in metro areas. And 37% of the U.S. black population lives in black neighborhoods. So as you can see, like when we talk about black neighborhoods, we're talking about a lot of black people. And that same study shows that the differences in homes and neighborhood qualities do not fully explain the devaluation of home in black neighborhoods. Homes of similar quality with similar amenities are worth 23% less, or on average about $48,000 per home less than the average white home or home in a white neighborhood, which amounts to $156 billion in cumulative loss for the home values. So, as you can see, just living in a black neighborhood or just living around black people makes it cheap, makes it a cheap neighborhood. And white people like living in cheap neighborhoods, even if they don't like living around black people. So they don't just move in. They pave the way for other white people to move in. I mean, if a white girl moving to you next door, she's probably about to Christopher Columbus your hood. So we're going to talk about the ways that you can tell if your neighborhood is being gentrified, right? First, the biggest thing is watch what you eat. See, the changing food landscape is the easiest way to tell when white people are coming. John Hopkins studies on food deserts show that minority neighborhoods often lack well-stocked grocery stores. So poor areas have fewer grocery options, fewer food options, and when they do have food options, many of them are high priced and unhealthy. And you know, white people can't live like this. Before they arrive, they got to make sure that they can get their gluten-free, vegan, farm-raised, free-ranged, organic couscous. Gentrification is usually prefaced by the arrival of healthy options and grocery stores with 29 varieties of tomatoes. And if you ever spot a sign that says Whole Food coming to this location, you better be scared. In the unabridged gentrification thesaurus, Whole Foods is a universal synonym for white people. Every time they ring up a pomegranate and spicy pumpkin seed quinoa salad, a white person hears the gentrification bat signal. And the second way you can tell that white people are about to move in is you're probably going to get a rent notice. Like Brooklyn is the perfect example of how gentrification increases rent and pushes out lower and middle income minority families. As Brooklyn became the mecca for New York hipsters, the area became younger, whiter, and more affluent. A report by the New York University Furman Center says that the decrease in black population affected Brooklyn in a number of ways, right? As the number of people with college degrees increased, so did the rent. And since 2000, the rent in Brooklyn neighborhood, in the Brooklyn neighborhood of Williamsburg and Greenpoint, has increased 79%. So when you can't afford to live there, that means white people are coming. And the third way is black-owned businesses start to disappear. See, remember that thing I said about Starbucks? See, it's not because Starbucks has, like, you know, special kinds of coffee beans. Or remember the little Jamaican restaurant where you used to get jerk chicken because they were always out of oxtails? I mean, like, I don't know why, but Jamaican restaurants always run out of oxtails. You know, that is an example of what is displaced when white people move in, right? Like, when white people move in, they come in the same way that McDonald's keeps McFlurries on the menu, but the machine is always broken. Is the oxtail machine broken? I don't know. Okay, I'm going to get off the oxtail. But that Jamaican restaurant is now a Subway. Your barbershop is now a Starbucks. That beauty supply store where you bought your weave and your hair gel is now a Starbucks. In fact, everything is just a Starbucks. Because if there's one thing white people love more than bragging on how they got their jeans from a thrift stop shop, uncoordinated writhing to guitar solos and white supremacy, it's Starbucks. So minority-owned businesses always disappear when a neighborhood starts gentrifying because they have to make way for high-volume corporate stores because, you know, small businesses can't afford the rent, which leads to economic disempowerment of black communities because, and it's the important part, see, that Jamaican restaurant, see, they took their uniforms to get cleaned at the black-owned dry cleaners. And that little black-owned sandwich shop, right, they bought their bread from the local, you know, food distributor. But when those white corporate-owned businesses move in, that money doesn't cycle through your community anymore. And so they don't hire people from your community. And that leads to the exiting of the black wealth and the black dollars from black communities. So it's not just about black-owned businesses. It's about keeping money in the neighborhood. Or maybe you want to buy a bouquet of flowers for $534 a piece because you'd never see anybody in those, you know, white-owned thrift stop shops, but they're always around. I think it's the Russian mafia. Either that or they're selling, reselling shit they found at other thrift shops. Number four, the schools get worse. Now, I know this seems counterintuitive that, you know, a more affluent population makes schools worse. But, see, white people don't like sending their school, their children to school with black students. So they are more likely to enroll their children in schools outside of the district or in private schools. And most people who gentrify neighborhoods are young. So as they displace families, they aren't as likely to get involved with school-related issues. They're not likely to make sure that the schools are safe or, you know, good. So they take advantage of other options because of their higher incomes. And because of that, the schools get worse. Even if they, you know, create a better school, what they'll do is they'll take the good-performing black school students out of the local public schools and put them in what they call magnet schools or private schools or, you know, the schools that they create because, again, they don't want their children to go to school with black kids. Now, the fifth thing you'll see is almost universal. It's an increase in police presence. See, white people are calling the cops on your ass in a minute. As your community turns whiter, you'll notice a larger police presence because white people's interactions with cops tend to mean that they are safer, while black people's interactions with cops generally means that they'll be less safe. They call it order maintenance. It's when police patrol white neighborhoods heavily to keep the peace. In San Francisco, which, you know, gentrified and really displaced a bunch of black people, police patrol more in the city's gentrified areas, which have also seen a rise in cases of police brutality. They've also seen a rise in people calling 311, which is the non-emergency police number. See, they report people in their neighborhoods for stuff like noise violations and minor infractions. And many cities have installed quality of life phone numbers by which they can call the police about non-emergency issues. In Seattle, 23% of the disturbance calls were filed against people in gentrified neighborhoods, citing noise and other complaints. So when the police show up, that means your neighborhood is being gentrified. Like once I got a letter asking for some advice, and this is a true story from a woman who moved into a neighborhood in New York, in Harlem. And she moved above a bar, a nightclub. And her letter was how to ask if they could keep the music down without, you know, being or seeming like a gentrifier. And I told her, like, wait, you moved into a place that existed and that it had a whole ecosystem, a whole economic ecosystem before you moved there. And you said, yeah, but I know it was a nightclub when I moved in, but every business around me should stop what they're doing to cater to my comfort. That's the difference between improving a neighborhood and gentrifying it. You want the whole population of that neighborhood to cater to your privilege. And the final indication that your neighborhood is being gentrified is white people shit. I mean, for real, like, there's no other way to describe it. If a basketball court is replaced by a dog park, that's white people shit. When was the last time a dog got a college scholarship or played his way out of a rough neighborhood? But if you bring up Bud Air, we might have to fight because he went straight to the pros. Plus, he was a terrible rebounder and his three-point jump shot was trash. But if your neighbor knocks on your door and asks, if you don't mind keeping it down between the hours of 3 p.m. and 1 a.m. because that's when she's meditating and doing yoga, that's white people shit. If you notice your corner store stops selling Black and Miles and 40s, but suddenly has SPF 201 sunscreen and a microbrewery with IPAs, that's white people shit. If no one shows up at the Black Lives Matter march, but some white lady in Birkenstocks stops you in front of the Whole Foods to ask if you'll sign a petition to erase the neighborhood mural of Tupac and Biggie because their misogynistic lyrics might trigger someone and she wants the neighborhood to be a safe space, that's white people shit. And you know the cops are somewhere near and you know it's too late to stop the white people from coming anyway. So all you can do is, download the Vio app, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube, and tell a friend. And we'll leave you today with that famous saying that has been uttered in every Black neighborhood just before it was gentrified. Hey, I think there's some white people outside. See you next time on The Griot Daily.
Thank you for listening to The Griot Daily. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review, download the Griot app, subscribe to the show, and share it with everyone you know. Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcasts@thegriot.com.
The Griot Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the Griot mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.